to the Jeff Rubin, Jeff Rubin Show. I am Jeff Rubin on the phone today with Wally Ferriston, who runs the cue card department at Saturday Night Live. Wally, welcome to the show.
Jeff, thanks for having me.
Wally, how long have you been doing this job?
I have been doing it for 29 years, since 1990. That was my first season on the show.
And how old is Saturday Night Live? Remind me.
We just had our 44th season, I believe. Yeah, we started in 1975. So, yeah, we just celebrated 44 seasons, I think, or 43, maybe.
It was running. By the time you showed up, it was like, it was already Saturday Night Live. It was like an established thing. How did you get that job?
It's a weird thing to think that. I started watching Saturday Night Live when I was 10 years old in 1975. And then I started on the show when I was 25, and I've been there for that long. It's kind of crazy. I went to Syracuse to be a writer. I was in Newhouse and wanted to be a comedy writer. And my brother at the time was a receptionist at SNL and just moving on to his first writing job at the Letterman Show. And he knew somebody in the cue card department, and then they were looking for somebody, so he recommended me, even though my handwriting was terrible. So I took the job to get my foot in the door. I went for an interview, and they said they'd seen worse printing, which was very very polite because my printing was terrible. But they hired me, I think probably because of my connection and probably because, you know, I probably fit in with the group. You know, that's kind of a key thing of fitting in with people there, because it's long hours of tedious work.
What made you want the job in the first place, just being adjacent to this comedy institution?
Yeah, I wanted to. I mean, I was a huge fan of the show, but I had been out of college for about 3 years, and I was antsy to start my writing career, and I wasn't having any luck. So I figured, let me start working in a business, even if it is doing cue cards, and then hopefully I'll make some connections and I'll start writing get some writing gigs, which is exactly what happened, actually.
How did the cue cards lead to the writing gigs?
The guy that owned one of the owners of the company, Kevin Kay, who was just president of Paramount and Spike TV. He was at the time a low level executive at Nickelodeon in charge of a couple shows. So when I told him my aspirations, he said, "Hey, well, give me some writing samples." I did, and he hired me for a show called Wienerville.
Oh, I remember Wienerville. I loved Wienerville.
Mark Wiener, yes. So he hired me to write an episode of that freelance. They liked it so much, they hired me for two more episodes. And then from those scripts, I basically used that to get a job writing for an episode of Space Ghost Coast to Coast.
Another classic.
Yeah, and then I just kind of parlayed that, much about the industry, but once you start writing some stuff and get some credits, it's easier to get gigs. So I was a freelancer on Celebrity Deathmatch for a year. I did stuff on MTV. I started developing things, so it was actually a good amount of stuff, but it was never enough to support myself, unfortunately. You know, it was, you know, 500 here, 1,000 here, and I was making my money really doing cue cards. And as I continued doing cue cards, I got better and better at it. I also started writing jokes for Weekend Update, and I've gotten about 20-25 jokes on Weekend Update over my career there as well. So that helped as well. That was good credit to be able to use as well.
So when you say you got better at it, like, what is it that you were not good at first since gotten better at?
It seems like a simple job, but it's not. It's really not. Actually, the thing was, I was almost fired because my handwriting was so bad. It wasn't great. And the first week that I worked, they didn't. You know, Tony Mendez was the writer. I don't know if you remember Tony Mendez. He was famously David Letterman's cue card guy. He hired me, but he was fanatical about printing and wouldn't let any printing that was bad out on the floor. So the whole first show that I wrote, he didn't use any of my cards. And, you know, all my colleagues had to pick up my slack that I wasn't using because they weren't using my cards. They had to redo all my cards.
So purely just the handwriting's bad.
Handwriting was bad. The thing that saved me, and I don't know why I picked this up as a skill, but I held my first show. I held 6 cards. I'll never forget it. It was a Mike Myers Sprocket sketch. Kyle MacLachlan was the guest host, and I held the first 6 cards of the sketch. I was the only one holding those cards. So if I screwed up, the sketch was friggin' gonna tank. And me as someone that, you know, like puts people on holding cards now and been running it for so long, I would never have done that to anybody. So I think what he was doing was he was testing me, and if I screwed up, he was going to fire me. So I was out there. I held the six cards somehow perfectly. My boss was standing behind me, and after he said, "Your entire body was shaking, but those cards were held perfectly still. I don't know how you did that." So the next week, again, to test me, he put me in three sketches. One was on the top of a ladder. One was lying on my back. And then another one was, I think, just in a weird, kind of weird position. And I held them all perfectly. It was something that came naturally to me. I don't know why. After that first experience, I wasn't panicked. I kind of looked at it as like, you know, it was intense, but it was kind of fun. And that's what saved my job. You saw how good of a holder I was. And that ended up being, anybody can write cue cards. Anybody can be learned to print. And my printing did get better. But holding cards, as I've learned over the years, is a really hard thing to do. You need patience. You need skill. You need not to panic. It's all timing. And for some reason, I was really good at it. And that's what saved my job. So when I say I got better at it, I was really good at that at first. But within 3 years, Tony left to go run the Letterman show. I was running the show. I was picked over people, all, like, there were four or five people above me. I was picked over them to run the show because how good I was at holding and how calm I was under stressful situations. And that's what they looked for there.
Yeah, so when you say you're holding them perfectly, what are the qualities of a perfect hold?
I mean, it really varies, but you want to keep them as steady as you can when they're reading them. There's all these different techniques, and it's hard to talk a show, obviously, over a podcast, but there's these techniques of holding the cards steady, holding them in the right position so that the eye line looks right, flipping them exactly when they're supposed to be flipped, or, you know, turning them. There's just all kinds of different things that go to it, but, it was something that came naturally to me.
And you mentioned you were laying down. I'm sure it makes sense, but help me imagine, like, what is a situation that might call for you to hold the cue cards while you're laying down?
Cast member on a ladder talking down to somebody, you know, maybe sitting down in a chair. So the eye line has to be, you know, really low for that to look, you know, reasonable for him to look at. So I was laying on the cards were flat on the ground, and I was laying down next to them pulling them.
Do you have a sense of how critical the cue, like, they, I know the show is put together quickly, obviously, but, like, let's say on that day when you're holding the cards for Mike Myers, you panicked and you just dropped them all on the floor. Like, does Mike Myers know his lines? Like, or just what would happen if you just dropped them? Like, does the show just stop dead?
You know, that's never happened. So let me just say that. I mean, there's been situations where, you know, you'll pull one card and that card gets stuck to it. So there's a big hesitation, and that's happened. And usually you won't really be able to tell at home because it's like a second they wait, but you know, you're panicking. They stop. Yeah. There's a stop thing. Unless it's somebody that has memorized their stuff. So now Mike Myers wrote all his own stuff. So he might've been able to ad lib and get back to it until we get back to where it was. But maybe not. It might have been the shock of seeing the cards go down that he would have, you know. So fortunately, you know, unfortunately, things like that happen. You know, once in a while, we don't drop the cards ever. But little things happen where you'll pull two cards at once, or a card will be stuck because we tape mistakes over, you know. There's sometimes just a pause, you know.
When you say you tape mistakes over, that means to correct a mistake, you cover it with tape, kind of like whiteout, right?
Yeah, when we're making changes, when the writers bring us down changes, if we can save a card, like if there's only like one sentence gone out of six sentences on a card, we'll tape over with white artist tape.
And there's and a lot of changes coming at you pretty quick, right?
Oh yeah,
into the last minute and such.
So maybe
now is a good time. Could you like walk me through the week at SNL from your cue card perspective?
Sure. So we don't start until Thursday. Thursday morning at around 11 o'clock.
And where's the week for SNL overall? The writers had started on Tuesday, is that right?
Writers start writing on Tuesday. There's a pitch meeting Monday night. The writers write everything on Tuesday. Wednesday is the read-through, Wednesday afternoon into evening, where they read all the sketches. And then Lauren, the producers, and the host will pick the sketches that are in Wednesday night. And then all the craziness starts, you know, with wardrobe and stuff like that Wednesday night. We don't come in until Thursday, until rehearsal is going to start. Thursday's a light day.
Are you not there at all on Tuesday and Wednesday? Are you just
nope.
Like, wait, you're waiting until Thursday to show up?
Correct.
Not a bad gig.
Yeah, I mean, well, I own my own company, New York City Cue Cards. We do cue cards also for Late Night with Seth Meyers and Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon and Conan on the West Coast. So on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I'm also working on Seth Meyers.
Gotcha.
So I'm not just sitting around doing nothing. I mean, like I am right now. Summers are nice. Summers are nice. I work 4 days a week, and we have a lot of time off in the summer. But So Thursdays we come in, and Thursdays typically used to be a light day. Now with all these pre-tapes we're doing, there's a little bit more to them. But Thursday, they rehearse the music rehearsal from about noon until 3.
Do you have anything to do with the music rehearsal? Surely
nothing.
You're not like holding up lyrics for Beyonce or whoever.
In the old days, when I was starting, we used to hold if a musician didn't know his songs yet. We used to hold cue cards for them. So I have held cards for Sting when he had a new album out and didn't know his lyrics yet. And a bunch of other people I can't remember off the top of my head right now, but that's what we used to do. Now they will actually bring in a teleprompter if they don't know the lyrics, just for the music stuff. But again, that's a risk because prompters go down, and I'm surprised that they still do that. But I think it's just a crutch. I think it's just a crutch that some of the musicians, you know, use. But it's not very often at all. Maybe once a year that'll happen, I think. So Thursday, so they do the music rehearsal.
We know, we kind of have a sense what is probably going to be in the show, or most of what's going to be in the show at this point.
Everything's been picked Wednesday night, right? So, but I won't have everything yet. I'll only have stuff we're going to rehearse on Thursday. So my guys will come in around 11 and start printing one set of the 4 or 5 sketches that we're going to rehearse that day.
I want to get really into the nuts and bolts here.
Sure.
Is it delivered to you? Like, when you first see the sketches, is it like printed in a piece of paper? Is it emailed to you? Like, how do you get the thing that you're about?
Yeah,
to
everything's hard copy. A lot of trees are wasted for this, but everything's hard copy from us. That's the best thing. It's easier to print off of scripts anyway. So script department for SNL brings us, or we go up to their office in the morning at 11. They give us all the scripts that are available.
And script
Sometimes
department is not the writers. That's another department that's
nope.
sort of handling
the script. Exactly. The script department is responsible for making changes from the writers. The writers give the script department changes, and then the script department distributes that either through themselves or through interns to us and all the staff members, the director, the producers, anybody that needs it, the musicians, if there's music in it, it goes all around.
Okay, so the script department gives you a printed out copy of the sketch. And it's
written
like script format, you know.
Yes. There's an SNL format. I don't know what it's called, but it's a format that you have to print the sketches, and that's what they all get put in.
What makes SNL format unique from like regular TV shows?
I don't know. I think it's just it's uniform so that it's easy to mark up for the director. It's easier for changes. Like when there's changes, the script department can make the changes and then distribute them really quickly. There's something about the font that they use and stuff.
Okay, so is now the time to start writing cards?
Correct. Yeah. Now I'll have two or three guys in there. Not myself yet. I used to, but now that I've paid my dues and own the company, I pay my staff to start writing those cards. And we'll only do one set of cards for each sketch we're going to rehearse for many reasons. One, because it's going to change dramatically from Thursday to Friday. And it's going to change dramatically as soon as we start printing it is what happens. We'll print it, get one set of cards, and then the rewrite table start before they even rehearse it. So the rewriters will go to rewrite table, all the sketches on Thursday. So we've printed a sketch, and then the rewrites come down, and sometimes it's a complete rewritten sketch. So we have to start from scratch, or we throw out 50% of it or 75% of it and rewrite it before they rehearse it.
How long is a sketch? Let's say 5 minutes maybe?
Yeah, it really depends. You know, the cold opens are longer. But a typical script, you know, anywhere from 10 pages to 15 pages maybe, 13 pages.
How many cards is that, and how long does it take you to write those cards?
Again, it depends on the amount of dialogue or action in it. But typically an hour or so per sketch for 10 to 12 pages would take like about an hour to print one set of cards.
And how many cards is that? You know,
anywhere from 30 to 45 cards.
All right. So now it's rehearsals. We've got a stack of sort of beta cards, one stack of them.
Correct.
Things are in flux a little bit, but we've got them, and then they use these for the rehearsal. Is that right?
That is correct. I'll be out there and I'll rehearse. I'll talk to the host to see who the host is, if they've worked with cue cards before, are they new, have they been with us before. If it's someone that's already hosted, you know, it's an easier week for me because we don't have to teach them how to read cue cards and go through that whole spiel. But if it's somebody new, I meet them, say hello. Don and I, the director, talk to them about using cue cards, the good techniques to use, and, you know, just anything I can do to help them, you know, just say, you know, just ask me, let me know. We go through the routines and start running them.
Just in case any of my listeners get super famous and find themselves in a position where they're hosting Saturday Night Live, let's make your job easier. What should they know? Like, what are the techniques that you should know about using cue cards as a performer?
Well, it's funny. This is the speech that Don gives them. Don't memorize anything. And I think that's not quite fair. I think it's really good to be really, get really familiar with it. And the good host, you can tell, memorize a little bit, but get really familiar with their lines, because the lines change so much. That's why it tells them not to memorize. But it's good that they're really familiar with the lines and the way the sketch is. You know, if by telling them don't memorize anything, it's just like, yeah, don't look at it. Just read the cards. That's not always the greatest advice. It's really get familiar with it, but don't stick to anything. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's one of the things. And then when you're reading the cards, stick to reading the cards. If you go back and forth between the actor and the cards that you're talking to, it looks like you're reading the cards. So we'll put the cards in a position right behind that actor's shoulder, where if you just look at the cards, it looks at most shots, it'll look like they're looking right at the actor.
Right.
So there's little tricks like that. And if it's a short line and they want to deliver it right to the person, then they can grab the line and then say it to the person if it's just like two or three words. But for the most part, we tell them to stick where the cards are. And that's the direction they should be looking at.
Are there ever any hosts or actors or anyone who's had a specific request, like they have their own thing they like to do with cue cards? It's a little unusual.
No, there was Laura Flynn Boyle. You remember the actress Laura Flynn
Sure.
Boyle? She was on. I went to introduce myself to her, and she's like, oh, you have your work cut out for you this week. And I was like, oh, why is that? And she's like, well, I'm dyslexic, colorblind, and nearsighted.
So how do you adjust for that?
So what I did was basically she said, the more you run the cards with me, the better I'll get. So I would be in her dressing room. I was in her dressing room the whole weekend. So right before a sketch, I'd run the cards with her. We'd run this. We'd do the sketch on the floor, and then I'd go back into her dressing room and run the cards again with her, just so she got familiar with the order the words were in. And then this is the first time it's ever happened. You know, we have to wear black, show blacks when we're on the floor, as most production people do.
What does that mean?
She asked me to. Everybody in the production team, the union guys, anybody that's on the floor that's not the actors, have to wear a black shirt, black pants, so that you don't stand out. If there's a shot of something, you don't want to stand out. It's just you want to blend into the background kind of thing.
You usually don't do that.
No, we do that. But for this show, for her, she asked me to wear a bright red shirt so she could find me easier when she was looking for the cards, make sure she was looking at the right cards.
How would color blindness affect her experience?
The host is in. We have five colors that we use for ink. The host is always in black, but there's blue, red, green, and brown. So she was having trouble seeing whose lines were who. She could see her line because it was black. I guess she could see black. That wasn't a problem, but not being able to differentiate the other colors was throwing her off a little bit too.
Why those five colors? Like, it's always those five?
Yeah, there's no other real colors. Like, we can't. Pink is too close to red. You know, there's no other colors that you can really use. So those are the colors we use. The host is always in black, and then the cast will share those other four colors.
And now you kind of alluded to this earlier. Like, why not use a teleprompter? Like, I assume that's like what most maybe award shows and other live shows do. Why? Do you guys use cue cards?
Well, main reason is teleprompters go down. It's a machine, and things, you know, things break. You know, things break and they go down. And if it went down during a live show, it would be a disaster. It would be horrible.
Which is not unprecedented. I feel like you can go on YouTube and search for like teleprompter fails, and like you'll find them. You know.
Oh yeah. Well, Jimmy Fallon famously 2-3 years ago went out to host the Golden Globes. And he, the prompter, a photographer, 5 minutes before the show was going to start, came in late, unplugged something to plug in his, to charge his cell phone, and he unplugged the prompter, and they didn't realize it. Jimmy Fallon came out to do his monologue, and the prompter was down for about 20, 25 seconds to start the show.
So these things, and this isn't a hypothetical. This happens.
This happened 3 years ago.
Award show, yeah.
Yeah, the Golden Globes. Lorne Michaels is in the audience. Jimmy Fallon's hosting, who's, you know, one of my clients. And it was horrible, and I felt so bad for him. But again, I was sitting at home talking, sitting next to my wife, and I was like, I've just solidified my job on their shows for the next friggin' 10, 15 years. Because Lorne was sitting in the audience, and was like, that's exactly why we don't use a teleprompter. That exact reasoning right there. Something like that happens.
Are there other pieces of Saturday Night Live that are a little bit old school in how you guys do them, just because it's an old show at this point?
Yeah. I think you know, not cue card related, but I think the writers coming in late on Tuesday to write and writing all night, I think that's an old school thing because they used to do a lot of cocaine back in the days in the 70s. And writing, they wouldn't come in until Tuesday night and write all night long because they were doing blow all night. I'm pretty sure the writers aren't doing that anymore, but they still come in 4 or 5 o'clock on Tuesday and write all night long when they could easily come in at 9 o'clock in the morning, write till about midnight, and then go home and get a good night's sleep. You know,
right.
It's the same amount of hours, but I think that's one of the old school things that it's kind of a tradition.
They still
do that. You know.
So these people that you have writing these cue cards. You're someone who was sort of plucked into the cue card business, who had bad handwriting. Now you're running the cue card business. How do you find people to work with? What do you look for? Who are these people?
Yeah, most of them are people that are trying to, you know, find a job in the entertainment business. And
not unlike
and
just, you.
Unlike, exactly. So that's kind of one of my goals as a boss. And owner of this company is bringing some young people in that are looking, you know, I got a couple guys that want to do stand up, you know, a couple guys that want to be editors and giving them a job and, you know, hopefully helping them with connections, make connections that he can get out of cue cards and go do something that they really want to do. You know, they have fun doing cue cards. It's not like it's a torture thing, but, what we look for when I hire somebody, first of all, is most of the people that I hire, and even interview are friends of people that already work there because the work conditions are tight, small. We're under the bleachers in Studio 8H. We don't have a lot of room, and you're there sometimes. If you're writing cue cards, you're there sometimes for 12 hours on a Friday just sitting there writing cue cards with, you know, 8 other people. So you want to have somebody that's going to get along with everybody. You don't want somebody that's going to be like, oh, so-and-so's here today. I do not want to work, you know. That's the first thing I kind of look for, a good personality, someone that's going to get along with people. Second thing I look for is that handwriting. You have to have good handwriting.
You would have hired yourself.
I would not have hired myself. I probably would have said, sorry, go find something else. But yeah, so we look for, that's the first thing we do. We sit them down for a couple hours, teach them how to write. If they get decent handwriting, you can tell pretty quickly if they're going to learn it or not. And then if they get good handwriting, then I'll hire them. And then I'll worry about teaching them how to hold later because, the handwriting for me is the most important thing. Getting all that work done. SNL has gotten really heavy on sketches and films and stuff like that. And there's just a lot of work, and that's where I really need the help.
Are you guys doing the cue cards for the pre-recorded stuff too, like the videos?
Again, in the older days, we would if we would write them up, and I'd have to send somebody on these shoots. But again, it was only like one a week, and it wasn't every week, so it wasn't a big deal. Now that we do 3, sometimes 4 a week, what we do is, if they need stuff printed on Thursday, they'll bring us scripts and we'll print 1 or 2 sets for them. And I'll train all the interns or the intern production that work for the film unit. I'll train them, just give them a basic training session for about a half an hour at the beginning of the season on holding. And they have interns hold the cards, during those film shoots.
Okay, so let's get back. I want to get into holding, so let's get back to our going through the week. I think we kind of left off at rehearsal. Rehearsal's kind of interesting because I imagine for you guys and whoever's holding the cards, you have to rehearse too because so much of the comedy is the timing. You got to figure out
exactly
where you're going to be, right? Like, it's a rehearsal for you too.
Exactly. So what I'm doing while I'm out there is I'm looking at the positions that I'm going to need. I haven't printed the sketch, so this is my first time seeing it out there. So what I'm doing is I'm looking at the set, I'm looking where the actors are, looking at the blocking. I'm trying to figure out where I need to put, how many sets of cards I need. So I have one set of cards. I have to figure out, do I need two sets? Do I need three sets? Do I need four sets? Sometimes it's multiple sets. Sometimes, you know, there's all kinds of different scenarios that happen. So while we're blocking and I'm working with the actors, I'm figuring out in my head, okay, I need to go back and tell these guys, you need to dupe this. We call this dupe this when we copy the sketches. You need to dupe this three times, four times, or you only need to dupe this twice, but it's only like card 1 to 30. You know, it's all different kinds of things. But that's what I'm looking at when I'm out there holding the cards for the first time.
And like when you duplicate the cards, are you what do you have a recollection, like a specific sketch that required the most number of duplicates, that you needed like seven people in various positions because so many people were moving around?
There was I don't know if I can remember. There was one sketch last year. It might have been a Streeter Seidel, our friend Streeter Seidel sketch.
Our friend Streeter Seidel.
Yes. Where there were like six positions. I don't know if it was, I wish I could remember what it was, but it was like, there were like six different positions, like six cameras in six different spots with the flats behind them. And I needed a set of cards over every camera. You know, and it wasn't full sets for all of them, but it was good 20, 30 cards for some of them. And, I was like, went back to my guys and I was like, okay, we need six sets of this. They thought I was joking. I was like, no, I'm not joking. There's six sets out there.
Is there like a craziest sketch that you've had to produce from a cue card perspective that required sort of the most problem solving?
There was one. I don't remember exactly what year it was. It was 80 Bryant's first year. There was a debate sketch that we did. So it might have been, I don't know what her first year was. I don't want to guess on that. It might have been 2012. It was one of the election years because there was a debate sketch. And the way we always will mirror the way they shot it on, you know, the way they shot it on, you know, TV. So the way they shot it was 80 was playing an announcer and her back was to the camera. And there were people on the left side, the right side, and in the middle. And there were no, so because the camera was behind 80, it was shooting the set, and there was no way for us to put cue cards for 80. We couldn't get any cue cards for 80 because she was facing, you know what I mean? She was facing the set.
Yeah, yeah.
We would have had to have cards in the set, and I didn't know what we were going to do. And I was talking to the producers, and the producers like, I was like, well, can she read from a script? And they were like, no, you figure it out. And this was like on Friday. This was like on Friday night, and I was like, "You want me to figure it out?" He's like, "Yeah, that's your job. Figure it out. Figure out how you're gonna get cards for her. You can't leave her." It was her first year. It's like, might have been her first or second show, and I was like, "Oh man!" So it was really a challenge, and I had to think about it. And I was like, "Well, the only thing that I think we can do is if you put two of my guys in the audience, in, you know, as extras." And then when 80's going to talk, they'll stand up, and they had to time this out. They'll stand up when they're not on camera with her cards, and then stand down when she's done before they cut to the shot. And they're like, all right, let's try it. And it worked. It didn't work the first time we rehearsed it, but after we get the timing down, we did it perfectly, and it worked out really well, and it was pretty amazing to watch.
So this is like a very basic timing question, but like, how do you know when it's time to flip the card? Because you can't see. I mean, I guess what is the standard holding position? Is the card?
Yeah, you're
front of you,
you're holding
you can see the back of it.
No, you're holding the cards to the side, so you're
you
reading
can see
along.
The front.
Yes, you have to read. You have to be reading along because it's all timing. Because we're pulling the card three or four words before the person stops. Three or four words before the end of the card.
Oh.
So we're because when you're reading something, your brain has those last three or four words already in its head.
Right.
So the reason it works is we're pulling that card with three or four words still on it. So when they finish that, they pick right up on the next card.
And is the dead card just thrown on the floor? Does it go to the? What do you do with the other cards? Back of the pile?
No. That's a very good question. We have, because I think in the old days when they started, there used to be union guys that would help with the cue cards because it was a lot simpler back then. Then when it got more and more complicated, they weren't helping out. A union guy can never lose a job. So for every card I pull in Studio 8H, I have to have a union guy behind me catching it.
Mm. So it's like each cue card So if you have six decks, that's 12
yes.
men.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
On the cue card business. That's a lot.
Well, yeah.
Like, and then, people, the studio is not that big, so it's just like,
no.
To have 12 people who need spots is just like, that's, yeah.
It definitely adds to it, but you know what? I mean, when you're holding like a 50-card or 60-card sketch, to have somebody behind you catching the card, it makes our job much easier. So it's a really good thing. I'm not complaining about it at all, because it makes my job 100 times easier, because the lighter you, the each card you pull, the lighter the sketch gets. And now, if you didn't have a catcher, you can't just throw them on the floor. No, there's no room. So you'd have to put it behind. When you don't have a catcher, you put the card you pull behind it, behind the other ones. So it would never get lighter. It would be the same weight, and it makes our job much tougher. So it's a great thing that they're there.
Do your arms get tired? These are the dumbest questions, but I really want to know.
Nope.
It seems like your arms get tired.
That is not a dumb question, and I'll tell you why. So I've been doing this job for 29 years. I have had tendonitis in my right elbow and rehab that. Tendonitis in my left elbow, rehab that. Tendonitis in sore shoulder, rehab that. Tendonitis in sore shoulder, my left shoulder, rehab that. I was good for 8 years. 2 years ago, my right shoulder broke down. I got cortisone shots, did physical therapy all last summer, and had a great season, but the pain came back towards the end of the season because SNL was so grueling. So basically I had a cortisone shot at the beginning of the summer, and I'm actually doing physical therapy all summer long to get ready for SNL this season. So I'll probably be doing that for as long as I'm doing SNL. Cortisone shot at the beginning of the summer while SNL's off, and then physical therapy 3 times a week just so I can hold these cards when the season starts.
Are you the only person you know of at Saturday Night Live that has to go through physical therapy to prepare for your job at Saturday Night Live?
I feel like I probably am, and I feel like when I'm doing it, I kind of feel like I'm an athlete preparing for the season. I know it sounds silly, but I have to keep it, I'm not in the greatest shape weight-wise, and I'm working on that, but I have to keep my shoulders and my arms healthy, because if I don't, it's my livelihood, it's my job, the producers and the cast members, rely on that.
So now we're rehearsing, you're figuring out where everyone has to go, and I guess you probably, as this sketch starts to solidify, you have a sense of where the cards need to be, and you're starting to rehearse it and get the timing down. I assume you guys rehearse with the actors every time they're sort of rehearsing. Is that right?
Yes, correct.
And then what happens Friday and Saturday?
Well, things are being rewritten. We're rehearsing while things are being rewritten. The thing that's been happening lately because of Trump, the cold open doesn't get written until Friday night. They start working on it Friday night because they want it to be, right up to the last minute to be something topical. So what's been happening is a lot of times we'll finish rehearsal on Friday, and the last thing we do is cold open, and it's not ready. We don't even have a script for it yet. So we have to either wait or we leave and we go home, and we don't get it until Saturday, which is a nightmare, because the cold open typically is, if it's an Alec Baldwin Trump cold open, sometimes there are 100 cards, and there are 3 sets of 100 cards. And it just adds a tremendous amount to our workload, and it's a horrible thing.
And then I imagine, even as you get closer to showtime, changes still coming in. You guys probably aren't done till 1 a.m. on Saturday morning.
Yeah, changes don't stop coming in. There's 10, 11 sketches per week, and writers are changing. It's constantly changing from Thursday all the way till the show starts. We've got maybe half the show done in changes, and then we'll maybe finish with the first round of changes around 12 or 12:15. And then if we're running late and they want to keep a sketch in, they'll come down and they want to cut a minute of it. Sometimes 3 minutes before it's going to air, 2 minutes before it's going to air, 1 minute before it's going to air. And we have to cut cards and make changes on it.
Earlier we were talking about like what happens if you drop a card, a situation that's never come up. But what about the opposite? What happens if like a host misses a line or improvises something that wasn't in the show, or just things get a little hairy in some way that you're a little off the cards now? Like now I'm holding this stack of cards. It's not quite right anymore. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah, you have to roll with it. When that happens, you always, it's not like you're looking for like, okay, it's not my fault, I didn't do anything wrong, but it's kind of like that. It's not my fault, I didn't do anything wrong. Let's just roll with it. Let's do the best we can. You know what I mean? If a mistake is made, it's kind of like, you know, they come to you, what happened? Did you guys make that mistake? Because we want to make sure it doesn't happen again, kind of thing. But when a host or somebody goes off cards and things start going awry, you just try to keep up with them and just try to find where they are. You know, sometimes they'll skip a card. That happens a lot. So sometimes we're holding two cards at once, one card above the other card. And if a host is nervous, they have not used to reading, sometimes they'll jump a line. So they're supposed to be reading the top card. They'll jump to the bottom card and read a bottom line. And then you have to scramble because it either doesn't make sense. You don't know if the actors are going to go back and say those lines or they're going to go forward. So it's kind of like you just kind of have to react to what they react to.
Do you ever have a situation where the sketch is in like a foreign language? Maybe it's not in English. Maybe it's not even in Italian or Spanish. It's like in a non-Roman character language. And how do you handle that?
Yeah, I don't remember. I mean, there were sketches where Bill Hader did that Italian talk show host. And it was pretty much Italian gibberish, but we still had to follow along the Italian gibberish. And Bill would keep to it most part, but sometimes he would go off. But he would always be good about, you know, getting that last line. Like I always said to him, like, look, you can say whatever the fuck you want, but you have to say that last line in gibberish because we're following along. We won't know when to pull that card. So that kind of stuff was interesting. And then Fred would do, I think it was Fred or Nassim. We're doing when Nassim played the Korean leader there,
Kim Jong-un.
Nassim played him, and there was like a translator, but she was reading Korean or fake Korean, and the translator, which might have been Fred, was reading was reading the English. So we had to have a set of cards next to each other. I think that's how we did it. Or we did it half of a card in Korean, fake Korean, and half of the card in English. And we just followed along with them.
You know, we've mostly talked about SNL before, but you mentioned that you also work on these other shows. What's
right.
The difference between SNL and are all these shows unique? Are the talk shows similar and SNL is unique? Or how do you compare the experience of doing the cue cards on different shows?
The live factor is the biggest thing. So going to work at Seth Meyers where it's not live, we tape at 6:30. If they add last minute things, last minute changes, they'll hold the show for 5 minutes.
Right.
So the stress level is from 100 on SNL to like zero on Seth because they'll hold the sketch. And then sometimes, you know, we'll do live shows. Like we did two live shows 2 weeks ago. And you know, we had to print a lot of cards. So but when it's not live, it's like almost like having a day off for me because I know if things come last minute, they'll hold the show for 5 or 10 minutes if they need to. You know what I mean? So it's so much easier. And Seth and Jimmy, they're both really good at reading cue cards. They've been reading them since they were on SNL. So it's a lot less stressful.
Even though the show isn't live, it's kind of like live to tape, right? So like,
right.
Is there the same pressure for the show to go smoothly? Because like, they could retake stuff, but they don't want to, right?
No, Seth Meyers, they don't like to. They want to. If they can, they're gonna tape for 60 minutes and show that 60 minutes. You know, it's such a lower. Casualty rate because if there's a mistake on the cards, I've been working with Seth for so long. I've held like 90% of his cards since he's been, you know, on TV working at, you know, SNL and doing Weekend Update. And then I've been holding every cards on Seth on his talk show. And I play I play myself in a lot of sketches on the show. So if I make a mistake, he'll call me. If he feels like he'll call me out on it, because if he flubs a line and it's a mistake on the card, he calls me out. He willingly calls me out, makes a joke about it. And then we move on. But you know, that's something you couldn't do at SNL because you're live and you're taking time away from other performers if you start kind of break character and stuff like that. But on his show, he can do that. It's kind of, he turns it into a joke. I'd rather him turn it into a joke than get mad at me for making a mistake. And it's all fun. You know, it's all fun and games.
It's fun that you've kind of become a character on that show, and you're also sort of a character on SNL, right? Like, you've been on the show, like, as Wally the Cue Card guy more than once,
I have,
right?
I have played myself on, so yeah, Saturday Night Live for many years. I played myself on Seth in different characters. I have, I played myself on 30 Rock. Tina Fey wrote me into a bunch of episodes on 30 Rock, because her coming from SNL as well. I played myself on Last Call with Carson Daly, his first three seasons when he shot in New York, because they shot that 8H, and I did cards for him as well. So yeah, I've become, Wally the Cuker guy has become a mythical TV character.
Do you remember, like, what was the first one of those? Do you remember your first, like, actual appearance on SNL?
My first actual appearance on SNL was the famous, I don't know if you remember it, but it was the famous Steve Martin monologue where he sang Not Gonna Phone It In Anymore, and Chris Farley was in it, and he came out of his dressing room, and I was standing with cue cards by the page desk, and he said, "Mr. Cue Card Guy, put your cards down over there," and he's not going to read my cards, and I put them down, and that way I act shocked that he put my cards on. That was my first appearance as myself.
So are you at all nervous? Because here you are in a sketch with Steve Martin and Chris Farley, arguably two of the funniest people of the past century, right? And
Yeah.
You know, like, it sounds like you're playing yourself. You've got not a lot to do. And honestly, it sounds like your cue card role is a lot more high stakes. And so, like, you're used to performing live on the show, but this is a little different, right?
It's a lot different. Yeah. I mean, I was, I acted in high school and, you know, wanting to be a writer. And I think, you know a lot of writers. Writers always want to be on camera as well. It wasn't my goal, wasn't my dream, but it was something that I was comfortable with. I had performed in front of people. Yes, performing with Steve Martin. I've been in a sketch with Alec Baldwin and doing stuff, you know, him talking to me for a lot of lines and stuff. Listen, it's nothing that I thought of, but it's just something that's part of the job. And it's a really cool part of the job. And I kind of enjoy it.
Seems like a cool part of the job, but also just be like, you know, meeting all these cool, famous people. Like, do you have to get over being intimidated by these hosts in any way?
Yeah. I mean, they're normal people, and for meeting them too, you know, I'm a key part of their success on that show. So 99% of them have to be nice to me because I hold their success in my hands. You know,
doesn't have to be nice to you. Someone who's like so good that they're just gonna learn the lines.
Yeah, I mean, there's people that, I'll give you an example. Matthew McConaughey came in and I introduced myself on Thursday like I always do, and he said, "Yeah, I'm gonna have all my lines memorized.
Wow.
I'm good. I'm not gonna need you."
And I love, like, it. Great, yeah. McConaughey story.
Yeah, great. No problem. And I'm like, okay, no problem. You know, I do whatever the host wants me to do. I go, no problem at all. You know, I'm still there because I'm holding for the cast and stuff like that. You know, and then that was Thursday. Like I said, Thursdays. This was back when it was only like three sketches on Thursdays. They're easy sketches. Friday afternoon, after we had done like three or four sketches, he came up to me and he was like, "All right, in case I need you, where are you going to be?" Like, you know, he started asking a few questions, and I was like, "I'm going to be over here." And I started talking to him a little bit, but he was still like, "Ian, just in case, I'm still memorizing everything, you know, don't worry about it." And then on Saturday, he came up to me in a panic, and it was just like, "Okay, all right, where are you going to be?" And it was like, you know, he'd understood, but didn't really apologize, didn't really say anything. I saw him at the party after the show, and he came up to me and he was like, "Dude," he was like, "I want to apologize." He was like, "I didn't know how much it changed. I didn't know what I was getting myself into." He was like, "Thank you so much for helping me out." You know, some of them were just in a little bit of a denial factor, but he had, you know, he was really nice after the fact. He was just like, "You really saved my ass. Thank you so much. I didn't understand that the show was this moving animal." I mean, he went into this whole description. I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was pretty funny.
I bet. That's...
Yeah.
What has, like, changed in the show over the 30 years you've been there? Like, is it different today than it was then?
Yeah, I mean, I think sketches have gotten longer. I think, you know, I think it's gotten maybe a little bit more political because of the times that we're in right now. And it's just getting more complicated with all the different camera things you can do, things that you can do with cameras, things you can do with the control room, with, you know what I mean, with fades and people disappearing, and, you know, there's so many different with technology, you know, and you know, Mikey and Streeter do a lot of those things where they do sketches. They wanted to shoot a sketch through Instagram last year, and they ended up not shooting it through Instagram. They ended up doing it through a regular camera, but the initial idea was they wanted to shoot it through Instagram on Mikey's phone, and Right, it didn't work
like
out.
The filters, but this, the filters.
Yeah, that filters thing, exactly. Yeah. They wanted to use a cell phone and try to shoot it with a cell phone. And that was, I was trying to figure out how I was going to do, that was a pretty challenge because I was like, okay, the cards are going to have to be small as it is with a camera. If it's with a cell phone, it's going to have to be super small. So I was trying to figure that whole thing out.
But they ended up working out.
Exactly. But they're those guys are always challenging us and challenging themselves by making, you know, these sketches that you walk around and I have to walk around with them. The royal wedding sketches and the royal birthday sketch for the baby, where they walk, the camera walks around and I have to have a small set of cards and I follow Mikey around the whole set with just one set of small cards.
Why does smaller camera necessitate smaller cards?
Not a small camera. It's just how close the camera is to their face.
Got it. Yeah,
so you have to go small with the print so that it doesn't look like they're reading, you know, about the camera.
Do you have, you know, everyone's got a favorite Saturday Night Live sketch or two over the year. I got to know what yours are. Like, you've got such a unique perspective on the show over the years. Like, are there sketches that, even though you saw them rehearse over and over again, that, like, still make you laugh?
What up with that?
What every up single with time, that?
Every single time we did it, I laughed really hard. And then there was just something about Keaton, the way Keaton's face made me laugh every single time I did it. But there was a sketch this year where I don't remember who the host was, but it was a cooking show, and Keaton was voicing a cake that had come to life. And he was standing, it was funny, he was standing next to me off camera reading cards from across the way. But he was standing right next to me doing this cake voice, and for some reason, the voice he was doing of this cake was making us both giggle and laugh really hard every single time he did it. It was amazing. It was great. It was one of those things I'm going to really miss when Keaton goes away. Hopefully, he doesn't go away and leave the show, but it's one of those memories I want to always have of him.
How many years were you doing this before you made it a business? Can you tell me about the decision to make it a business?
Yeah, so I started in 1990, was my first year working on the show. And just for reference, Adam Sandler, Chris Farley, that was their first year as well.
I remember some of those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, you remember them?
So I
started in 90. Within 3 years, I was running the show for this other company. And then 2003, so about 10 years later, they started bouncing paychecks every other paycheck, and we were being paid late, and I was trying to order supplies, and the supplier for cue cards was telling me, I'm not sending any more cards until your boss pays me, he owes me this amount of money. So my hand was kind of forced into starting my own company. So I went to the shows I was working at the time, which was Conan, Saturday Night Live, and Last Call with Carson Daly. I told them I was going to start my own company. Would they keep me on? And they basically said, you and your guys are doing all the work. Why would we not, you know, keep with you? So I started my company at the end of SNL in 2004. And I had an instant company. All the guys working for me were my friends, so everybody came with me. And I ended up buying them out. I ended up buying out my employer. I made a deal with them. I got a lawyer, and we made a deal, and I bought them out over 5 years. Made a payment and bought them out.
Your employer being the original cue card company.
Correct.
And so, like, you sort of formalized what you were and took the reins on what you were already doing. Was there anything new you had to learn once it was your business?
Oh my God! Yeah. Well, I mean, I had never even imagined owning my own company. Thank God, my wife was in marketing and was a business major, and she basically, you know, when we decided to do this, she knew what a business plan was and made that up. I had no idea what that was. So she said, yeah, we can make some money if we do this. So I had to learn everything. I'm still learning after 15 years of doing it. Like, all the tax stuff and running payroll and entering things into QuickBooks and all this stuff. I didn't know anything about it. I had to learn it over the years. Like I said, I'm still learning and I'm not great at it. It's the part of the job that I really don't enjoy, but it comes along with, you know, being the owner of a company. So
it's so funny. Like, I talk to people who do all sorts of interesting things and then start a business to, like, run the interesting thing, and that's, like, a pretty common answer. Is it, like, takes you away from the core interesting thing you were enjoying and gives you like all these new tasks that you signed up for exactly.
Yeah, it's not what I want to do. And you know, and she helps me make the big decisions and things like that. But you know, we just started a 401k for my company 2 years ago.
Cool, yeah.
And we do profit sharing for the full-time employees as well. So, you know, we're doing some cool things with it, but it's just, you know, I'm still learning it. And, it's not the part that I enjoy. The part I enjoy is out there holding the cards and working with the celebrities on camera.
Are you like actively soliciting new business from new talk shows or anyone else? Is that part of the business?
No, you know, there was
like
a time when we
set up.
It was a time when we were slow about like 7 or 8 years ago, maybe 10 years ago. My wife was like, we need to get some more business. And I'm like, I what am I going to do? I can't, there's not really anything I can do. I have to wait till a show comes to New York and they want to shoot. Like, you know, we do other shows. We do cards for Ink Master on Paramount, and we do cards for Project Runway. All the Project Runways we do cards for, so we do things like that. But anybody that comes to New York, there's like one-off stuff like that. But I can't, there's really no way to do it. I did at one time send a mailer out to advertising agencies because I had done some commercials here and there, you know, giving them a pitch that I could save them production money costs by having cue cards on set, and see, I'll save you time and stuff like that. And I didn't really get any bites for that. So I tried to do that, and it really didn't work. But now, with Jimmy Fallon doing the Tonight Show and Seth in SNL, my company is making more money than I ever made. And I actually sometimes I turn away the business because it's not worth it. Like a one day job, someone looking for 4 hours of cue cards. I don't have anybody to give them. I'm employing 16 guys in New York City, and sometimes I just don't have any manpower to send them.
Well, Saturday Night Live is just this like cultural institution, and you have such a unique perspective on it. It's so interesting to hear about this unique role within this unique institution, this unique perspective you have on it. And then also, it's very interesting that you like sort of stumbled into this cue card business, and then you know, turned it into an actual business. Like you were able to recognize what was going on and kind of take the reins on it. And I don't think that's easy to do.
No, it wasn't. There was a lot of stress involved in the early days, but now I'm fully enjoying it. And I've got two older boys. One's in college. One's going to be a high school senior next year, and they both want to go into TV production. And hopefully, one of them will take over down the road.
Cool. I love it, Wally. Really interesting stuff. Thank you so much for telling us all about it today.
Jeff, my pleasure. Anytime.
That was a HeadGum podcast.